Welcome to the Well-Rested Woman podcast series. I'm Karen Brody. The delicious conversation you're hearing today was previously recorded live and will begin after the bell. Hello, hello, Bold Tranquility women, and welcome to a live call today with Robin Carnes on using Yoga Nidra to release anxiety, depression, and PTSD. I'm Karen Brody, and I am the founder, and I'd call myself the chief Yoga Nidra meditation cheerleader here at Bold Tranquility. Today's discussion is part of our podcast series, The Well-Rested Woman, and we're doing it live on this first Monday of the month. It's a day we've decided here at Bold Tranquility to offer women rest, Yoga Nidra meditation kind of rest throughout the day. So every hour during the day today and on every first Monday of the month, you can call in and lie down for 20 minutes with Yoga Nidra meditation just to help you relax. And as I really like to say, to wake up to your true nature, to remember who you truly are. Because exhaustion is really more than getting enough sleep. Exhaustion can also come from being who you are not. So today I want to have a kind of Yoga Nidra 101 conversation with Robin Carnes, who was actually my first Yoga Nidra teacher. It was 2004, I'd say about 2004, and I was on anti-anxiety pills to manage severe panic attacks, and I had a 2.5-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I had just interviewed 118 women about their birth experiences and thought I'd write a book about it, but nothing was coming out of me. Just nothing. I was completely blank in my mind. I was so deeply sleep deprived, and literally I was like running over curbs in my minivan. I was so tired. And then one day I discovered Robin's Yoga Nidra class, and it felt like I had entered this beautiful place of mystery, just like birth and death, really. That place where if you're given this invitation and it's safe, you can hold everything just as it is. You know, the anxiety, the opposite of anxiety, the exhaustion, and the opposite of exhaustion. And it really just felt like this delicious den, or maybe more like a red tent, right, where I had this permission to lie down, do nothing, and just be me. So the class was really packed with about 25 women, all lying down, some sitting in chairs because you can do Yoga Nidra in a chair, but most were lying down, and it was beyond magic. And a year later, I was off anti-anxiety pills. I was writing again, and that writing piece, you know, would become this critically acclaimed play about childbirth. So I was really intrigued about Robin and all this Yoga Nidra stuff. And little by little, I'd hear that she was starting to work with war veterans and that the program she was doing and the research associated with it were having these really positive results with a population of people who had many serious health issues, as you can imagine, like PTSD and chronic pain. So over the years, I heard that Robin co-founded a program called Warriors at Ease, and she also runs these beautiful live retreats in tropical places with women that I've always thought of going to, and it includes Yoga Nidra. So all of this led me to think we've got to have a Yoga Nidra jam with Robin, and here we are jamming, Yoga Nidra jamming with Robin today. So welcome, Robin.
Hello, Karen.
I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Before we just start, I just want to remind those on the line who are live with us that you can press star 2 if you're listening on the web. You can call it or type in a question in the Q&A box anytime during the call. So Robin will be taking questions. Okay, so let's jam. I'm so happy you're here. So I know I've talked about Yoga Nidra to women here at Bold Tranquility. I've described it, but I'd love to know how you define Yoga Nidra. You know, how do you define it? What is Yoga Nidra?
Well, I used to think it was when I first started teaching Yoga Nidra, which was probably early 2000s, like way before was very, very new in yoga nidra being here in this country. I used to think it was just a nice guided relaxation. And, you know, can't argue with that. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, kind of like a imagery-based guided relaxation. And that's the way I was teaching the class until I met my mentor and teacher, whose name is Dr. Richard Miller. And I met him when I was working on that study at Walter Reed. And I remember the first time I talked to him on the phone, having never met him, to ask him for help on the study, I asked him, or somehow or another, it came out in the conversation, what the translation in Sanskrit, you know, and as you know, Sanskrit is a language that has, you know, multiple, it's an ancient language, a sacred language, and it has multiple translations. There's sort of more superficial ones, and then there's more, much more nuanced ones. So anyway, you know, we have all heard the more sort of in everyday understanding about yoga nidra translation, which is, you know, yoga, and then nidra meaning sleep, so the sleep of the yogi. But when Richard described to me, his, you know, the way he translated yoga nidra, it opened up the whole, well, that and studying with him all these years has really opened up what it means to me. So what it means to me is yoga meaning wholeness, you know, in touch with our true nature of wholeness that can never be tainted or fragmented or broken, no matter what happens to us, and has never been tainted or fragmented or broken. So our wholeness, our essential wholeness, is part of our basic nature. And then nidra, the word meaning across all states. So in other words, wholeness, no matter what the heck is going on. So if we're happy, we're in touch with our wholeness. If we're sad, we're in touch with our wholeness. If we're angry, we're in touch with our wholeness. If we're tired, we're in touch with our wholeness. No matter what state that is that's always changing, that we're in touch with that part of ourselves that never changes. And that was a much more comprehensive understanding about what yoga nidra is than I had previously understood, and that's how I think of it now.
Yes, that's so rich. I mean, if you think about that, because I think a lot of women talk about feeling broken, you know,
mm-hmm.
and yoga nidra kind of reminds us that we can never be broken, really, because deep down there is not that, you know, that we are whole.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, that beautiful paradox of also completely recognizing and welcoming and accepting the parts of ourselves that feel broken.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, because I studied with Richard too. I'm just a level one
mm-hmm.
trained
mm-hmm.
yoga nidra
mm-hmm.
Instructor on with this is iRest yoga nidra, which is the integrative restoration that Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Miller created, and it's amazing. And that's the first kind of yoga nidra I experienced, because that's what you were teaching.
Yes, that is what I was teaching in 2004. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's really you know, I mean, as we like to say here at Bold Tranquility, you don't really take sides to yoga nidra. All of it's great. But what I do love about – I think it's all yum. But what I loved about the iRest method is this real playing with opposites, you know, holding,
mm-hmm.
you know, really inviting our body, mind, all of us to hold the opposites. Can you talk a little more about that and how we do that in yoga nidra? Because all of yoga nidra meditations do that in different ways. You know, in once we do in Bold Tranquility, we do hot and cold, and you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, sensation. You know, and so does iRest. But iRest really, I think, has embraced this pairing opposites. So
mm-hmm. incorporated it as a major aspect of an iRest yoga nidra practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think for women it's so critical, because for all of us, really, we live in this either-or society,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
And that often leads to our unhappiness or creates states of unhappiness. So, yeah, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, you kind of just said it in a nutshell, Karen. It's this idea that we identify, well, number one, when we feel broken in any way, we are identifying with the part of us that's real, but it's always changing. It's not as true and real. You know, it's not as sort of eternal as the part that's whole. But anyway, there are these states, these fluctuating states, including this even idea we have about ourselves as a separate, completely separate individual that, you know, is not connected to other people and other parts of life. So anyway, the suffering, and this is not unique to IRES, but the yoga philosophy shows us and teaches us that, you know, our suffering comes out of, there is pain in life, there is, being a human being, but the suffering comes out of identifying with the pain in such a way that, you know, we, number one, fuse with it and think we are it, and second, that we forget that it's part of the truth but not the whole truth. And so we get stuck on a, you know, what's really a continuum or a polarity in life, you know, and everything in life has its opposite and polarity, and it doesn't exist without that, that we get stuck and identified with one end of the polarity, whether it's I have to be happy all the time, or I can never feel grief, or I can never feel anger, or whatever it is. And whenever we get stuck on one end, what practicing with the opposites does is help us access that opposite that's always there, but we lose touch with it. And so it brings into relief, or big brings into perspective in an embodied way, not just like, yes, I know it exists in my head. That's actually not that helpful. It's in your body, really feeling that opposite in the moment. That's also true. And it's always there. I mean, the opposites always present in pairs. It's just sometimes we, because we're so identified or, you know, sort of caught up in one part of the opposite spectrum, we can lose access to the other end. And when we remember, or not just remember because that sounds cognitive, but when we realize in our full body the opposite as well, it just brings into this, number one, it's wholeness. It's the full thing. It's the whole reality, but it also like shifts perspective. Like, oh yeah, that's also true. That's also a part of my experience. And it just shifts, kind of sort of ejects us out of that either or state.
This is why I loved using yoga nidra with women who are pregnant because of fear in pregnancy and giving birth, and also women who've experienced trauma, and especially women who are giving birth who experience trauma, because just knowing, you know, pairing these opposites, and yoga nidra really brings you to that oneness, that state that you can kind of understand, you can shift out of a pattern or things like that. But this is a great segue to tell us a little bit about Warriors at Ease, the program that you started and co-founded, and how yoga nidra has specifically helped war veterans. I would love to hear a bit more. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I had this incredible serendipitous grace in my life to be asked to teach in this study in 2000, and well, the work on the study began in 2005, and the study happened in 2006, which was a pilot study using what became named as IRES Yoga Nidra. It's, you know, I was working under the supervision and along with Dr. Richard Miller on this study at Walter Reed, looking at the effects of this on PTSD, active duty service members who had PTSD. So the study itself was successful, but it was the number of people we had in it in the study was too small to be scientifically conclusive, and it was only meant to be a pilot to say, like, is this worth studying further, and the answer was yes, so that did happen. But then I was asked to come and work on a daily basis there at Walter Reed in this acute PTSD and traumatic brain injury program and bring IRES as well as yoga and other and breath practices to this group of people, I mean, to this sort of rotating group. And the program was an integrative program, meaning they had like more standard of care Western medicine along with this more, well, it's really very ancient, but in American healthcare, new thing to put into the program.
Right.
So, so as I did that, and I had no experience with working with veterans, I had never been on a military base. It was like a whole new world to me. Then working in some of the, you know, certainly then working in a yoga studio, but even in terms, I had worked using yoga and meditation in a lot of settings that were not traditional yoga studios either, but it was just very different in the culture. And so I began to see just incredible shifts happening with these folks that were extremely, not all of them, but most of them, very skeptical about what? You know, you got to be kidding me. Yoga and meditation for what I'm going through? You know, they had this idea of what yoga meditation was that, believe me, did not fit with their idea of themselves, which I could only totally understand because the way it's depicted usually, it's like women who are look like pretzels and sitting ramrod straight for, you know, in meditation for hours. And, like, first of all, that's not applicable. And second of all, it's impossible.
Right.
So I not interesting and impossible. So I learned a lot about describing yoga and meditation in a way that was culturally sensitive, and also to do it in a way that, well, all the practices I was offering, including iRest, are very trauma sensitive, in meaning that they are designed. They can be used and benefit anyone, but they are designed not to make any kind of trauma issues that are there in a person worse, but only to, you know, help them. So, and not all yoga nidra is trauma sensitive, and that is, I know no one's taking sides, but I will tell you that if you have PTSD, not all yoga and meditation are trauma sensitive. And so we can come back to that, but let me ask.
Sure,
I think that
perfect.
Would be a very important thing to talk about. But so anyway, I started just seeing this incredible shifts happen, and I was with each group of people for each group of service members for 3 weeks. So I saw them 14 times and 3 weeks, and I just was dumbfounded, really. Like, I was like, I'll have what you're having, because I hadn't had those kinds of things happen. And yet I saw, and it wasn't with everybody. Most people, it was subtle, like it is for most people. But there were people who would say, you know, like, wow, I haven't had any pain for 6 hours, and I've been in pain for 6 years. Or I haven't slept more than 2 hours in 3 years, and I slept 5 hours last night. You know, after two or three times of doing iRest. So I just began to realize, like, this is, first of all, if you strip it down and just present the practices as a health-promoting practice, which it is, you take all the woo-woo out, you take all the Sanskrit out, you take all the yoga philosophy out, and you just say, try this and see if it's helpful. It helps 90% of people, and so I was just like, this is not acceptable that this is only available like a very tiny number of places in small dark rooms, and nobody knows that it's happening. Mm-hmm. And so it came to me actually in a meditation. I was sitting in a meditation, a 10-day silent meditation retreat, and I'm not a person who gets like a lot of cosmic visions or anything like that. I wish that I did, but I don't. I tend to be much more on the sort of practical, grounded side. And this very clear, it wasn't an audible voice, but this very clear, not my mind, not my thoughts, cognition came to me, and it was, or kind of reality came to me that said, you know, you're going to start an organization that brings yoga and meditation to the military and to military communities, including veterans and their families. And it's going to train teachers, and it's going to, you know, there's a number of things, but it was like, that was it, and you're going to do this. And I was like, well, okay. I don't have any idea how that's going to happen, but okay. And so that was in 2008. And in 2009, I came together with several other women who had were also working in this field as pioneers, and we developed a curriculum to deliver primarily over the telephone in conferences like this, and now we do webinars all over the country and all over the world to teach yoga teachers and meditation teachers how to teach to military settings, to like basically learn from all the mistakes that we'd made. And both the cultural piece of it, it is critically important, because if you are seeming like Molly Moonbeam when you walk in there, you're going to, you know, no one's going to listen to you. And it doesn't matter what, you know, how much great stuff you have to offer. If you're not culturally sensitive, you're not going to make it. And number two, what makes something trauma sensitive? How do you create a safe environment for people to be able to let their guard down and their nervous system to start to regulate such that, number one, they can access that sense of wholeness in themselves because they're not so busy making sure no one's going to bust in the room and shoot at them. And number two, that when they feel safe on the outside, then they're able to actually start their system, their body mind, their wisdom of them that's innate in each person will start to let the traumas percolate up to the surface and be processed and worked through and let go of.
So it has to be a very safe environment. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a whole art to creating that kind of safety that we know we've learned a lot about and we teach. So it turns out that we've taught over 500 teachers now around the world, mainly in the U.S. And we now certify teachers to teach in military settings, and our certification is starting to be recognized by the DOD and the VAs and that kind of thing as they come to us more and more and say, you know, we're looking for a teacher who's well qualified, because they don't know, you know, what yoga is an unregulated industry. You could, you know, you could just like practice for a weekend and say, okay, well, I think I'll teach this. So it's very important to have well qualified people go in to do this kind of work, both for the safety of the people who are going to be receiving it, but also for the whole sort of reputation of what yoga and meditation is as it
sure.
integrates into this, you know, very patriarchal, top-down, scientific, you know, left-brained system that has tons of strengths, but it's very different than, you know, than yoga and meditation. So anyway, I know I went on and on, but that's what happened.
No,
and so now we just got our nonprofit status last year, and we are raising funds to be able to stop volunteering ourselves, essentially, and actually expand our operations to more and more settings.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, what a contribution. And I love, you know, that, like you said, the yoga, meditation may in years past, and I think less and less, is as woo-woo as it was, but you're kind of taking the woo-woo out with the still all that integrity of what it is and making it safer.
Exactly.
For people
mm-hmm.
to do it. That's beautiful. Well, what is it about yoga nidra, you know, beyond the way it helps balance the nervous system, what is it that allows people to start feeling less anxiety, depression, and even some relief from PTSD? What is it about this? Why do you think you see such good, you know, you saw some amazing results with people?
Yeah, and I have a private practice now that I continue to work with people with trauma and PTSD and anxiety, and I see it continue to work with people. Now, you know, it works differently with each person. But so you've already established, I assume, in other podcasts about the way that it works on the nervous system.
Well, I think it's be good to talk about that here too, because there are people who maybe haven't listened to our other podcasts
mm-hmm.
Or don't have our subscription, which is where we talk a little more about, you know, Molly Burkholm, who's your co-founder
mm-hmm.
of Warriors at Ease. She's on our one-year subscription talking about yoga nidra. She tells a great
mm-hmm.
story, actually, about a veteran who you probably know this, about he thought he was coming to medication class.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, but turns out, he found out it was a class for meditation.
Yes.
And then
and now he
stayed.
Teaches IRES.
And now he teaches. Yeah. And it really benefited him, and he's teaching others, which is an amazing story. So this works, you know. I mean, obviously, like you said, there are degrees to how how much it benefits different people. I mean, I'm never going to shake my pom-poms so much to say every single person is going to, you know, but it does work, and you've seen it work. So maybe, yeah, talk about the nervous system first, because not everyone has heard everything that Bold Tranquility has been talking about. Some people are new just with us for today because it's our day of rest. So why don't you talk about how it helps balance the nervous system, and then, you know, just what that means for feeling less anxiety, depression, relief of PTSD. These are big things.
They're big things. And there's lots of, you know, people that have these things. And that's how I got into yoga, is that I had adolescent trauma and then early 20s trauma. And I didn't call it that. I didn't know to call it that, but it left its impression on my nervous system in terms of not sleeping as well, aches and pains in my body, digestive problems, as well as anxiety and some depression. And so that's how I got into all of this in the first place, was that I needed it. And so, but it's easy to feel alone or like there's something wrong with you. And this is why I think it's extremely important. And it's something I used to describe to the service members that I worked with, and I still describe to all the different students that I work with, civilian or otherwise, is like we're not really taught about the care and feeding of our nervous system, and it's very crucial that we understand it, because it really determines the quality of our life and our health in so many ways. So in a nutshell, when we feel threatened, whether it's from war or, you know, child abuse or, extreme financial pressures, or you just got fired from your job and you're not sure what you're going to do, or, you know, divorce, all these things can cause our nervous system, the degree of stress that we're having, can cause our nervous system to go into fight-flight mode. And, you know, there's a little more nuanced version of this, but I think I'll just stick to the simple one. So fight-flight mode is your sympathetic nervous system being in gear, and it's designed to, like, help you escape from danger, physical or otherwise. The problem is that it's only really in our animal bodies. It's only meant to, like, help us run away from a lion for a few minutes and then shake it off and then go on with, you know, eating grass or gathering berries or whatever we happen to be doing. But instead, what happens in the modern world is that there's so much pressure, so much stress, and so much perceived threat, both cognitive and subcognitive, that our nervous systems, I would say a large proportion of, you know, U.S. citizens, especially if you live around a city, are in some part of the fight-flight reaction of the nervous system 24 hours a day. This means that you have trouble sleeping, maybe you have digestive problems or, you know, irritable bowel type problems, you have aches and pains, you have a lot of worrying and anxiety, you might have some depression, and that just names some of the things that might be going on. And what these, you know, there are all kinds of yoga practices and meditation practices, but what Yoga Nidra is aimed to do is one of the things of its functions is to help reactivate the part of us that's in rest and restore mode. It's like plugging your cell phone battery in or exhaling that. When we're able to go to sleep as it's time to go to sleep, and we sleep restfully, and we wake up in the morning feeling rested and like our battery's been charged, it helps our gut calm down, so our digestion is more efficient and effective. It relaxes our muscles and so that we have less aches and pains and chronic pain, and we feel more at ease in the world and less anxious. We're not having thoughts that are just gripping us day after day, you know, worrying us and causing us to be anxious. So the mechanism, one of the mechanisms in Yoga Nidra, and again, not all Yoga Nidra will do this, but one of the basic mechanisms in most yoga nidra practices is that it helps activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is what helps us feel rested and restored and able to, you know, flee and fight if we have to, but then shake it off and then go right back into sort of energy saver mode. So that's the kind of the first mechanism of yoga nidra that's so important. And it does that not through the mind, because all of those things I just talked to you about are not cognitive. I mean, we get way too many thoughts that are cognitive when we're anxious, but we can't leverage or modify or manage our nervous systems from our thinking minds. It is not possible. It's like Einstein said, you can't solve a problem at the level that the problem was created. Mm-hmm. So we have to go into the physical body and actually bring attention in a kind way into the physical body for that parasympathetic reactivation to occur.
I love that you're saying this, because it's sort of, you know, it's like you can't think your way to the parasympathetic.
You cannot think your way there. You can use your mind to focus your attention,
yeah,
but you cannot, if, you know, if there was a switch, we could switch on and off, you know, it was that easy just to think, you know, now relax, then none of us would be having this conversation, really.
That's
but
right.
It's not. And it turns out where you put your attention and how you use your breath are the only things that are known, besides pharmaceuticals, that are the only things, these ancient tools, are the only things that actually do directly volitionally affect the operation of our nervous system. And yet, you know, we receive virtually no information or training on this, so it's nuts. So the second, I'd say, major way I would say that yoga nidra helps to heal trauma is that it helps us, as Richard Miller says, disidentify with the things that we're holding on to so tightly and that are causing us suffering. So it doesn't mean all pain goes away, but it means it, like, helps lessen the death grip we have on how we have to feel, how we have to, you know, what emotions it's okay to have and what emotions is not okay to have, you know, what thoughts we're able, you know, we're willing to have and what thoughts we're, you know, pushing away. Well, it turns out we can push away all we want and we can decide all we want what we want to feel and what we don't want to feel, but we don't get to choose that. Our job is to learn how to actually welcome and experience in a kind, loving way what is coming through us at any given time. And when we do that, it allows the grip to loosen. We realize, like, yeah, I'm having a feeling of being angry, but I am not anger itself. I am something that never changes. You know, I am the part of me that never changes, and anger is present. So it helps with that. I don't know if I'm explaining this very clearly, but it helps us to welcome in, feel, and then let go of these tight identifications that cause so much suffering. And when we do that, we realize, like, oh, well, what's left when I let go of all that stuff? Well, it's wholeness.
Right.
Even though my leg could be broken, I'm still whole. Even though I may have just experienced a great loss and there's so much grief present, I'm still whole. I really am is still whole.
Yeah. This is where I just vigorously shake my yoga nidra pom-poms, because that is such a delicious moment, right? That, to me, that's the magic. What would you say is the magic? What to you, what's the magic of yoga nidra?
No, it reminds us who we really are. It reminds us, and while everything else about the world and the way our minds work, and we're so trained to use our minds, you know, but the way, almost everything else about the world and the, at least I'm talking about, you know, culture, human culture, says you know, believe you're a body, believe you're your emotions, believe you're separate, believe you're broken, believe you need this and buy this to be, to feel okay again, believe you need things and money, believe you need to look like a model, believe blah, 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 blah. This is the antithesis of all that, the opposite, which says, those are all thoughts. Some of them might be true. Check it out. But guess what? It doesn't ever, ever, ever change who you really are. And that's not a thought. It's an experience that you feel in your body.
That's the wake up to me. That's,
uh-huh.
That's to me what we're truly waking up to. At least what I'm referring to when I say that and when I feel that when I'm doing yoga nidra. I mean, what, tell us a little bit about, I mean, I know all yoga nidra, you know, isn't exactly the same. The map is a bit different, but can you just describe this sort of journey, because it is a guided meditation, and some people who are listening now, you know, have maybe done it once or twice with Bold Tranquility, but maybe haven't done it at all or have done a different style. So what would you say, I mean, all of these things, you know, with trauma, you say helps to heal trauma, helps us to disidentify with what we're suffering about, whatever, you know, what is it, how is this map leading us to that place? And you've mentioned the breath, and we use breath.
Okay, well, I thought you were asking one question, and then I lost. No, I'm not saying
whatever
you didn't.
Question you want.
Okay, well, I would like to speak to that, and then you can ask if I don't answer your question.
Absolutely.
You can ask me
again.
But I'd like to speak to how all yoga, and I'll just specifically talk about yoga nidra, is not necessarily trauma sensitive. Okay, so. I don't know all the styles of yoga nidra there are, and there are many, and I'm sure they're all wonderful in their own way. But if you're a person who has PTSD or some sort of significant trauma, significant anxiety that you're dealing with in your life, or significant depression, some nervous system regulation issue, I would seek out a kind of yoga nidra that, number one, utilizes some sort of safe place imagery. In iRest, we call it an inner resource, so that you can continue to build that and go back to touching into it anytime when, you know, you might feel sort of flooded or overwhelmed by what comes up. Second of all, yoga nidras, you would want a very body-focused, very sensation and feeling-focused yoga nidra practice. Some yoga nidra practices direct you to, like, see a picture or an image of the part of the body or that kind of thing. That's actually not a super trauma-sensitive thing, because with trauma or anxiety, you want to constantly be re-inhabiting the body. So the body may have not felt like a safe place to be, so you left in a certain way. You want to come back into your body and build more and more and more safety and familiarity inside your body. So body scans and the whole practice needs to be oriented to actually not relaxing yourself, but feeling the actual sensations that you're having, whether it's the sensation of a tingly feeling in your knee or the sensation that a particular emotion brings up or even the sensation in your body of a particular thought. So very body sensation focused is something that you do want. You also don't want, in general, you do not want other people, i.e. the teacher or the CD you're listening to be offering imagery that you, basically all the imagery needs to come from you. Because all trauma, though they have a very similar effect on the nervous systems of people and the bodies, the cause of the trauma and the unique characteristics of how that trauma happened and the triggers for that trauma being re-triggered and re-brought up in an overwhelming way are unique to each person. And so I know in the kind of yoga nidra that I first learned in, which came from ancient India or came from Indian culture, it was very directive, you know, feel this, feel that, know, you know, see this image, see that image, see this image, see that image. That directiveness is not trauma sensitive. You want people to be able to source themselves the imagery, feelings, emotions, thoughts that they're working with, as opposed to having them directed and imposed on the person. Let me see
Although
if there's anything else.
I should mention in iRest, I mean, you all do use imagery for some
yes.
of iRest. Maybe you wouldn't use it as much with people with trauma. Is that what you?
Well, what we
because
would
I know, like, you'll say a river flowing, or this, you know, like
mm-hmm.
different. Yeah, fire.
Yeah, some very benign ones, but
yeah.
But you would want to check those out with people before you put them, you know, put them in the class itself. You would want to check them out. So, like, ahead of time, you would just, you know, have people say images that they find soothing, and then, you know, if any, and then before, and then you would work those in to the practice with that group or that individual. But you would first say, okay, so is there anything on this list that anybody here feels like might be an issue for them? So you really are giving people lots and lots and lots of healthy choice-making opportunities and opportunities to say no to things, because that's also part of the healing, is that people don't feel something's imposed on them, because that's often how trauma happens, is something is imposed on you that you cannot get out of, or you feel like you have no good options. So letting people self-source, as well as checking it out with people before you're actually in the practice, so it's not a surprise to them when they hear it, is very trauma sensitive. And not all teachers are trained to do that, and not all systems of yoga nidra, you know, there are standard images sometimes are used. Like I remember in the first system of yoga nidra I learned, that dead body burning over a fire.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
was a standard
yeah.
image. And I have that on my first CD. There's a reason it's in there. It's just not something you want to put in a in a practice for a person who has trauma.
Yeah.
Especially combat
yeah.
trauma.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. No, I'm good.
But that's standard
yeah.
in some yoga nidras. And so
yeah, I just wanted to make people aware mm-hmm. if they did hear iRest, certainly there are some images that are.
Yes,
used.
Oh yeah, there are.
So
yes.
yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
that's
not
really helpful.
No images.
Anything mm-hmm. else? Anything else you'd say that, you know, if you're doing yoga nidra and you've had trauma in your past, or, you know, that you should really be sensitive to not do certain types of yoga, you know, is there anything else that stands out? Those are really useful. Anything?
I think the main emphasis is on the whole idea of lovingly and kindly feeling and experiencing your immediate experience as it is, as opposed to I should feel relaxed, or I should feel happy, or I should feel grounded. That just doesn't work, number one. And it just adds to the whole, you know, I should be some other way than I am because I'm broken idea. And the whole way that IRS teachers are trained is to help people embrace their experience the way that it is. And paradoxically, by feeling the pain, by noticing the emotion and, you know, really acknowledging it, really sensing it, feeling, as opposed to like pushing it away or minimizing it or shaming yourself for having it, by actually having all of the what's there, it shifts. You know, the average they've measured, and the average emotion lasts 90 seconds. It comes and it's gone in 90 seconds if it's not impeded. So it's mm-hmm. a way to learn how not to impede the flow of sensations, thoughts, feelings, and images through your system. Sounds really easy,
yeah.
though, really. I think it's a lifetime.
I know.
Yeah, I'm
right.
definitely
yeah.
still working on it for, you know, and will be the rest of my life.
Right. I have used yoga nidra on the, especially when I started iRest and I did the training with Richard Miller, I was using it on the grocery line. You know, I just found, you know, just the simple piece of pairing opposites, you know, what I'm feeling at that moment, and it really helped a lot, especially for somebody who had, you know, as I mentioned, panic attacks for a long time. So how often should women be doing it if they're feeling anxiety, depression, or trauma issues? What would you recommend? I get asked this a lot, you know, somebody who's experiencing a fairly high level of anxiety. What's the, you know, is it once a week? I was doing it only once a week and benefiting hugely in the beginning with your classes, but you know, what would you say?
Well, assuming you can access a recording, which there are many available, and I have several available, I would say doing some is better than none, number one. And so setting yourself some sort of really high bar of, like, you should do this for an hour every day, if that's not possible, and then you feel bad that you didn't do it, and then you stop doing it at all, is not so helpful in terms of the way our psychology works. We don't really know from research what the right dosage tends to be, but I would say if you could do, I have a 20-minute iRest that's, if you could do 20 minutes every day before you get out of bed in the morning, just as you're going to sleep at night. If you could do 20 minutes three times a week, that would be great. The more you incorporate it in small doses into your regular life, just like taking a multivitamin, the better. But don't start, you know, set yourself up for feeling like a failure by making unrealistic goals. I know that wasn't very, you know, prescriptive or clear, but, like, do what you can do. And
yes,
you'll feel better from doing it, and then you'll want to do more as opposed to having some kind of like, oh, I have to do this, and I just don't have time.
Right. I interviewed Richard Miller once a couple of years ago, and he said it's very similar to what you're saying, which is, you know, make it realistic. Do what you'll do. Make the commitment to do what you think. Because if if it's an everyday thing and you're just, you know, going to keep thinking, oh, gosh, I failed that day. And, I mean, in Bull Tranquility, we talked about chucking perfect. Please never think you're doing it wrong if you don't, you know, hit your goal. But try to be realistic, I think. It's a good approach. So then you won't sort of skip it and say, forget it. I'm never doing it every day, so I won't do it, which is what I did with meditation years ago, actually, when my kids were young. And I thought, oh, I don't have any time, and so I just won't do it. I can't do it every day, so I won't meditate.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so there is a couple of comments here online, and I want to remind you all, if you press star 2 or if you write in the Q&A box on the web, you can ask Robin a question. Well, first of all, Henriette from Holland just says, this is interesting, ladies. Hi from Holland. Hi, Henriette. And then there's another comment/question. Says, I'm listening now and I'm loving it. Yoga Nidra has been a lifesaver for me. I haven't thought of becoming a teacher until now. Robin, get out there. You know, people can feel the enthusiasm for what you're doing. So I'd love to introduce Yoga Nidra to grieving parents experiencing trauma after the death of a child whom I feel also experienced PTSD. Absolutely. I lost my son as a result of a car accident 7 years ago and think Yoga Nidra would be such a healing modality. How might I do this? I'm so ready. Thank you for sharing this wonderful wisdom with our veterans and so many others. So, wow. Well, thank you for...
Yes, what a nice question.
Yeah, so how might somebody who wants to get trained in this, I mean... We've certainly been talking about iRest here. That's one way.
Yeah, well, you can go to the iRest.us website, and they have a long list. I'm a teacher trainer. I don't have any scheduled trainings right now, but there are a number of excellent teacher trainers, And they have listed all over the world the trainings that are coming up for 2015. And I highly recommend that training. It's intensive and life-changing and very beautiful experience, very experiential. So that's one way if you're interested in, you know, specifically offering a trauma-sensitive meditation. It's not the only one, but I would be lying if I didn't say it was the best one. And I'm, you know, I have a bias. As far as learning to teach sort of trauma-sensitive yoga practices that aren't necessarily yoga nidra, but trauma-sensitive breath and yoga asanas and that kind of thing, there are a number of those type of trainings out there too. You need to be – oh, one of the nice things about IRIS is you don't already have to be a yoga teacher. You don't have to have a registered yoga teacher training under your belt to do that because it's not a physical practice, like no one's stretching their muscles or whatever. So you don't need to know anatomy and all those things. You can just, you know, walk in and learn how to teach. But in terms of doing more – yoga and meditation types of trainings, teaching trainings, you do need to have your basic 200-hour registered yoga teacher credential in order to take other the Warriors at Ease training, or I also teach just more general yoga, teaching yoga for trauma and anxiety trainings. I have one in New York with Molly Burkholm in May and one in Silver Spring, Maryland, where I met you, Karen,
yeah,
in August. But you, in order to come to those trainings, they're like graduate school, where your undergrad is having your registered yoga teacher credential, and then you come to these trainings to learn how to do the trauma-sensitive part of teaching yoga. So those are some ideas.
Do you have a website you can tell people about? Robin,
I do have a website. It's not very up to date, though. Well, Worries at Ease has a website. Yes, worriesatease.com is up to date, and we have lots of resources on there. And my own personal website is robincarnes.com, and there's some information about me and my CDs and stuff like that on there. But honestly, it doesn't have my latest events up there because I haven't quite gotten to that yet.
Yeah, well, we're just really loving having you here because this is so informative on many levels. I mean, for the personal, individual person just who is having trauma or anxiety, but also for those of us who might want to take it out in the world more, which I know I actually went to the IRIS training not thinking about using it beyond my small I worked with pregnant moms. I was doing some work like that, and I thought I would use it a bit, but the training is so much more. It's so wonderful in every way, so like you said. So, yeah, very special, even if it's just for you personally, but really great to learn these things for the world. I feel like it's a gift we give to others.
Mm-hmm. And ourselves. And that's
and
another
ourselves.
Really important thing is practicing yourself when you're teaching. You know, really it's, I think it's really unprofessional. It has some, you know, out of integrity-ness to, I made that word up, to teach something that you aren't practicing. That doesn't mean you have to be perfect at it. There's no, I liked your thing about Chuck the Perfect. But it is important to be a really effective teacher, especially with people with trauma, that you are practice, mm-hmm. you have a practice, a dedicated practice yourself. Whatever it
yes,
is that you're offering people.
That's exactly, yeah, I always say that. If you're going to teach yoga nidra, you need to be practicing it. And I love, and I always quote you, I say, my first yoga nidra meditation teacher always said this at the end of every yoga nidra is a service of love you give to yourself and all others. It mentors you into an understanding of your true nature, and it shows you that when you serve yourself, you serve all others. When you serve others, you serve yourself. And then you'd go, thank you. This completes the practice of yoga nidra. I know this is that was your whole ending.
Yes, and I learned that from Richard Miller. So just to acknowledge the source, you know.
Yeah, okay.
I,
well,
and
that,
you learned
and I
from
know
me,
you,
so pass it on.
Yes, because I say that because to me that says it all, you know. it's this service of love you give to yourself and all others, and it points you back to your true nature. You know, all of these pieces, so important. I want to read another comment here from Jolie in the UK. She says, I took an IRS course this weekend and asked questions about different systems using specific imagery and was given a similar answer about focusing on the inner resource and imagery that means something to that individual. And thank you, Robin, to qualify this even further. I'm loving and enjoying sharing Yoga Nidra in my community with moms, especially with trauma support, and looking forward to training more with IRES in the UK as soon as I can. And thank you to me for introducing you to the amazing work in the first place. Yay. Yay. Yoga Nidra pom-poms. We're shaking them. Yes. Yes. And, you know, whether you teach it or not, those of you listening, you know, I would just, you know, we're really talking about it in this universal sense of what a gift it is, whether it's just to experience it or teach it and experience it. As we kind of wind down, Robin, I just want to touch, I know this is a huge topic, but I feel like with the new year at Bold Tranquility, we've been talking a lot about not resolutions, but more like the sankalpa, what intention, what Yeah, what deep vow do you have, a deep heartfelt desire for 2015 or this moment, whatever, however you want to define it. So can you just talk to us about sankalpa, you know, what is it, how do you form one, you know, just some of these, what it means to you.
Well, sankalpa means born from the heart. And so, again, when I first learned about Yoga Nidra, I did it more like a, what do I want to create in my life? Or how do I want to reinvent myself? Or, you know, what achievement do I want to make this year? And all those are perfectly fine reasons to use sankalpa. But I understand sankalpa now more like, what is life wanting of me? We each have a unique expression to make in the world. And it's listening to that carefully, which is what we can do, what can happen when we're really well-rested, and doesn't happen nearly as well when we're not well-rested, is to listen deeply to what wants to be come through you. What is it that life wants of you? What is it that you have to offer or express the world into the world? Like for me, that, you know, communication from the universe that said, you'll start this program and it will do this. And like, if I hadn't been still, that was a sankalpa for me. And it has been calling me. I didn't think that up. It is something that thought me, you know, it is something that has pulled me and remembered me for 8 years. I've even tried to shake it off a few times because it has been a lot of trouble. It has not been convenient or lucrative in any way. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps calling me back to it. So that's the way I understand it, is that it's born of the heart, not of the mind. Not that your mind can't be brought into service to bring it into fruition. But it's something that the universe or whatever your idea of what's creating us and all of this is, that life is wanting of us. It's kind of like, thy will be done. And what is that in my life? And I know that only by listening deeply and only by the feeling that I have when I'm in that groove and things that I am living according to that, the best of my understanding, what is wanting to happen through me, and by the feeling I have when I'm not, when I step away from that sankalpa and I'm doing something else, either consciously or unconsciously, you know, my body lets me know it or my heart lets me know it. I can feel this tiny tear like, oh, no, that doesn't feel quite right. Ah, because I stepped away and now I can step back again.
I love that, and I feel like those of everyone on the call who's using, practicing Yoga Nidra, the sankalpa is such a, it's this setting an intention. It's what you're saying is, There's so much truth to that, and when we get still, we can really hear our Sankalpa and then live by it. And it's not always easy, like you said. I really related to what you said. It's like, when I woke up, so to speak, in your classes, and I said, oh, I'm writing a play about birth, and that was surprising. I never written a play.
I know. Really?
And it's not lucrative. And it's not lucrative either.
It might be for other people, and it may be for me someday, but it's not necessarily lucrative.
It's not
necessarily convenient.
Exactly.
And it doesn't necessarily fit with your idea about yourself. It could be bigger than your idea of yourself or smaller than your idea of yourself or both. It doesn't really care what your idea of yourself is.
Right. And this born of the heart and deeply listening, you just said it, what is life wanting of me? I love that question. I feel like that needs to go in a little bit of a quote box or something that I have. What is life wanting of me? Beautiful. Thank you so much. It's been beautiful having you here. Just as we close, if you had one word that describes the feeling you get when you do yoga nidra, what would that be? That be that one word.
Oh, the one that came to me is restored.
Restored. Thank you. Thanks, Robin, so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you
being here.
I enjoyed
it, and thanks everybody for participating in this. I felt, I don't know, it felt wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to mention, I see, there's, 40 people listening on the web. There's about 26 people live on the call, and as calling in. So we're a community of, I would say we're all women. We've invited women, but we don't say men can't come. But it's so exciting to come together globally. Women around the world. We had Jolie in the UK, Henriette in Holland, and we've had other people in the US also that I know are on this call. So in Canada as well. I should shout out to friends in Canada. So this is great to just be having this conversation with you all. And thank you, Robin, for sharing yourself with us so much.
My pleasure and honor. Thank you, Karen.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. And I've been shaking my yoga nidra pom-poms ever since I went to my first class with you. And I just really have to say that it was not only how much I connected with your voice as you guided me in yoga nidra, it was also really just something more that I got from you and your classes. And I could just feel how important this was, how this is like a mission, how this wasn't just, this wasn't just okay, get some restoration. And I know, like you said, your words restore, but I get that too, because that would probably be my first word too. But this was a commitment to oneself, and to the world and in the bigger, it's an invitation to take this like a deep bow on a busy day.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's
so
a beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
my pleasure.
You. Okay, thanks. And I'm going to, just as we wrap up, Bold Tranquility Women, and I'm going to say that this ends our Well-Rested Woman podcast series.